This is Michael Kaiser, and you're listening to the Good Beer Hunting Podcast. Today's episode is part of a series of conversations we recorded at the Shelton Brothers Festival back in August in Atlanta. A phenomenal gathering of some of the best brewers in the world, as well as a few niche cider and winemakers, all holding their own in one of the most diverse and interesting product portfolios that's ever been assembled. The folks from Shelton Brothers gave us a room and free rein to curate talks with anyone we wanted on any topics we wished. It's a somewhat speedy series of interviews, much shorter than you're used to on GBH, and that's because we wanted to see if a series of topics might emerge, a pattern of sorts, that might give us an indication of what's on people's mind at this point in time in this particular portfolio of producers. And I think it kind of worked. Also on a few of these episodes, you'll hear from a couple of other folks from GBH that drop in from time to time, so you might hear from Blake Tyers and Kyle Kastronik as well. This episode features Adair Paterno of Sante Adarius and Brad Clark of Jackie O's. Listen in.
Hello, my name is Brad Clark. I'm the Director of Brewing Operations at Jackie O's Pub and Brewery in beautiful Athens, Ohio.
All right.
And I am Adair Paterno. I'm one of two owners of Sante Adarius Rustic Ales in Capitola, California.
Yeah, pretty far apart.
Pretty far apart.
Yeah, I don't know the exact miles.
It's about 2,500, I think.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on your recent engagement.
Thank you.
It's exciting.
It sure is.
How are you going to make that work?
That is a popular question.
$4,000 question.
Yeah.
2,500 mile question.
Yeah.
We're going to work on making it more mutual over the next year or so. Yeah. A little bit more even, if you will.
I think as long as you guys just stay on the... thankfully, you're both in this like artisanal farmhousey space because
yep.
you can just stay on the event circuit.
Yeah, we can.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can do some work from home. So spending some time out in Ohio works for me. Keeping my house back in California. So I'll be doing some back and forth for sure.
You just had a huge release down at the brewery.
We did.
At Jackie O's.
Yeah, we had one of our kind of...
The calendar party or something it's called?
It's like our old school brew pub releases. We call them like the calendar page release. We use those tearaway calendars, almost like a deli counter. So January 1st is the first in line. We've been doing them this way since like 2009. So
there are only 365 bottles, is that the idea?
No, there's been times where we've had to break into another calendar. but over the years, we've kind of gone through dips and valleys of, the number of attendees. But this one was fairly quiet, but it went super smooth, and everybody left with plenty of beer. And,
so it's really just a way to use up old calendars. Is that how this started?
Well, we wait until the year is pretty much done, and then we get them for like buy one, get one free, and kittens and puppies and all this good stuff.
All the goofy ones.
What are you guys pouring today from Sante?
Today we're pouring Lucy Bell, so that's a mixed fermentation saison, all stainless. And then we're also actually pouring a collab that we did with Jackie O's.
Hey-o.
Called Lingering Spirits. It's a barrel-aged Flemish-style red ale.
It's aged in previous used bourbon barrel casks for stouts that I've made.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a really fun beer. So this is actually batch two of that, which we have not publicly released yet. So the first public release of that is here this festival.
Right on. And you brought some stuff that I think you had at FOFA as well.
Yeah, I brought, we have Scrip pouring today, which is our Grisette, which was pouring at FOFA as well. We also have Off the Beaten Path 2, which is a rye saison, primary mixed fermentation and stainless. And then we have Cellar Cuvée 11, which is a blend of five different bourbon barrel aged barley wines.
Look how hard it is for you to remember all these words. How are drinkers ever supposed to remember all these words?
I just remember them for him.
No, you're good at it. You're good at remembering.
Yeah,
all
but
the
you
words.
Can see his eyeballs looking into his own brain, trying to get it right. How am I supposed to order that at the bar?
You just say Cellar Cuvée 11.
Okay, that's it. Okay, great.
Yeah. Easy.
And there's a little sign that tells you what's pouring.
I've been talking to a few folks. One of my takeaways from FOFA this year was that it seemed like acid profiles were coming back into balance a little bit more than they had in years past. Is that? Did you have a kind of similar experience?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think through just kind of like this farmhouse group or circuit that we all kind of populate, for the past couple of years, we've all been talking about trying to bring balance back into sour beers. Yeah. And and like bringing the funk back, you know.
We've really been working on ours significantly. Our acid profiles, I mean, our beers got really sour, and we've always talked about our beers as being tart. So we actually restarted our culture at one point. We had it banked, so called it in and restarted the whole thing over again to try and get things back in line to where we kind of in our sweet spot.
Why do you think that happened? Because it didn't just happen in your brewery or your brewery. It kind of happened overall within this kind of niche that acid kind of... People started burying the needle on that a little bit, and cultures, I think, it kind of mutated to that point. Why did that happen? It's not just a technical thing. It's not just a cultural thing. Like, what's going on there? Why did we get there?
I think consumers and brewers alike were just kind of going for it and seeing how far can you take it? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe similar to what's happening like in the IPA sector right now. Mm. And then they kind of hit that ceiling. And then once you hit the top, like, where do you go from there? Like, you kind of have to, you know, come back down from the ladder and, like, figure out where you're comfortable. And so watching that happen through some other breweries, and also, I think, at our own with certain products, you figure out how to actually make them and make them more balanced and drinkable and enjoyable.
Yeah.
And I'm not a scientist, but I'm sure there are all kinds of technical reasons why that happens as well. Just as, you know, yeast generations progress and what, you know, starts to come out more in terms of the flavor profiles.
What was the feedback you got from your drinkers, from your fans, when you kind of reset the culture?
People are really excited about it, actually. Okay. Well, especially drinkers of Saison Bernice. So, and there are quite a few, and there are quite a few brewer drinkers of Saison Bernice. And that's where I've gotten actually most of the feedback, is from fellow brewers who are like, yeah, Saison Bernice is back. You know, people who that had been their favorite, you know, mixed fermentation Saison are certainly one of their favorites. Are happy that the acid profile has definitely come back a little bit, and it's got that sort of nice, light, lemony tartness that it started out with.
Yeah, so do you think there's ever any danger in resetting a culture like that? Because I'm thinking back to my own experience with a beer from Brewery Vivant up in Grand Rapids. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite beers from them is Farmhand, and it pushed a little more tart over the years. Mm-hmm. And it was one of my favorite beers. Every time I went there, I would get a case of it and bring it home, and my fridge would just be that for like a month. But then they reset the culture because they thought it got too acidic. And all of a sudden, it had just this like slight funk, very light, very dry kind of farmhouse beer, which was good in its own right.
Yeah.
But my first reaction was like, no.
I like the tartness.
I miss Farmhand.
Ours still definitely has a tartness to it. I mean, we did not get rid of the tartness.
Yeah.
And you know, our customers are generally very... they expect batch variation. I mean, so they don't expect that every single time they get a bottle of Saison Bernice, it's going to taste the same. They expect that it's going to taste different from batch to batch.
But you've had to kind of train them to think that way.
Yeah, I mean, we're not, I guess.
Beer drinkers like me are not born thinking that way.
No, I mean, it sort of happened naturally. I mean, I don't think that we had to do some big education with them. I mean, I think that they just know we make beers in really small batches, and... that's just sort of the way that it goes. So,
is it an ongoing conversation in your tap room, like talking with some of your drinkers that are in there consistently as to what's going on between different batches
and
what's going on with the culture
right now? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one reason why I think we sell the bulk of our beer out of our tap room. And that's one of the benefits, obviously, of doing that, is that you can be in constant conversation with your customers. And you don't get that same experience when you're out at a bar where somebody's never had the beer before and is selling it to you. So.
Yeah, and you don't necessarily have to answer to a wholesale partner that wants consistency either.
That's correct.
Yeah. You go through wholesalers, don't you?
Yeah, we absolutely do.
How's that
do.
Work out for you guys?
Well, it would be kind of interesting. Up until really the last year, all of our sour projects have come out of our brew pub. So that is annual releases. And, you know, and once again, that's like one or two wine barrels are coming together to make this release. So, you know, variation was expected and embraced from our customer standpoint. Now that we have a much larger sour production room happening now at our larger brewery, we're doing, you know, 40 barrel batches and have some large format oat tanks and stuff. Nothing's come out, like the second batch hasn't come out of a lot of these things. So next year will be interesting to see how effectively I can dial those things in. Luckily, blending can really help out with that. So that's what I've been working with a lot, is kind of blending a lot and just trying to train my instinct and my gut to how to navigate through these different funk and acid profiles, and also remember what the true identity of each of those brands is and how to get there through the various threads.
Yeah. I mean, you ending up in this kind of niche space of farmhouse and sour and yeast-driven beers is a very different trajectory than the way you and Tim came in. Because you and Tim came in with that sort of like as the end, like that was the goal from day one.
That was the goal from day one.
And my impression is, and you have to tell me yourself, of course, but it seemed like you kind of like brewed your way into that territory almost organically.
Yeah, I mean, I quite honestly, a lot of it was just being influenced by my peers through, you know, Hill Farmstead, through Tired Hands, through Sante, through Allagash, through all these things, just trying all these different beers. You know, forever we've been doing sour beers since 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So that's new, or that's not so much new for us, you know, working with cultures and barrels and reds and blondes and fruits and all that stuff I'm very comfortable with, but we were never a Saison brewer by any means. And primarily Jackie O's is known for bourbon barrel aging and big stouts and things of that nature. So from visiting these brewers and being at these events and talking about things and drinking their beers and being inspired, it was kind of the next thing that I really wanted to jump into. But I wanted to do it right, so we really kind of took our time, did some small things at the brew pub, but then when we did our big production brewery build out, built a specific sour production hall and bought like a separate bottling line for it and extended our barrel warehouse from 3,200 square feet to 12,000 square feet to have specific, you know, sour aging room and to make it larger, and then going for it and like bottle conditioning, which was something that we had not done, and building a hot room and trying to really do it right. And so far, I feel very, I've been pleasantly surprised with how everything is going, and I'm excited to see, you know, if I can continue that trajectory. It will be a challenge, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's been interesting to watch you kind of grow into sort of the identity of a brewer who has committed to Saison and sour.
Mm-hmm.
I think
he makes some great ones.
When I talked to Tim up at FOFA, one of the things we talked about was the duality that he feels as with his identity as a Saison brewer. Some days he feels like a Saison brewer, other days he just feels like a brewer who makes Saison and other things.
Yes.
How do you feel about that? Like, how would you describe, like, do you feel like your identity is a Saison, you know, is of a Saison brewer, or do you feel differently?
Well, first of all, I don't brew, so I always mm-hmm. like to get that out of the way, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of, you know, people... My tag says brewer, but I don't actually physically do the brewing. I do other aspects of the business.
It's yours.
But the brewery obviously does a significant amount of Saisons. I feel like if we had a flagship beer, Saison Bernice would be it. And so in terms of identity, I think that for me is how where I feel our identity sits. But I think we struggle with that all the time, because we want to be able to make all styles of beer and make them all very, very well. And if you come to our tap room, you can get IPAs. In fact, all of the effort and all the money lately has been going into sort of upping our IPA game, which, you know, we just sell locally. We don't package any of that in anything that can be shipped anywhere, certainly. So I think that there's sort of that constant pull between, you know, when people come to the taproom and they have IPAs, like, I didn't even know that you guys made other styles of beer other than, you know, Saisons or sour things or tart beers. So I do think that that's sort of a constant struggle for us. But I know Tim certainly, as a brewer, wants to be known as somebody who can make all styles of beer and mm-hmm. do them well. Mm-hmm. And so as a brewery, we want to do that as well.
Yeah. Why do you think there is so much identity around being a Saison brewer? Like, nobody goes around talking about being a porter brewer. Some maybe a little bit, we'll say, lager brewer. Right,
yeah.
There's a little bit of identity associated with that, but certain styles or certain genres seem to have a strong sense of identity with them.
I think it goes back to like the history of the style, and like it's a very like romantic thing to think about.
It is.
You know, being a farmhouse brewer, or, you know, we look at all these like Belgian brands, and, you know, and they're in these picturesque places with these historical buildings and these very rustic surroundings, and equipment is not up to date, it is not shiny, you know, and they're using locally sourced ingredients and all these things, and obviously that is what is inspiring all these beers. But it's like a lifestyle, right?
Mm.
Or that's what it beckons back to. So
Yeah, more than most styles.
Yeah, and that's something that is very hard to achieve in today's society. So that's the struggle, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you want to commit to it and be like, I am Saison Brewer, like, you probably got to, like, get rid of your cell phone. Or, you know, or, like, I don't know, or, like...
Yeah. Well, Sean used to have
Sean
used to be able to mash in from his iPhone in the morning.
No, you still can.
You can go the other way.
Pretty sure, yeah, you still can.
Yeah. And I think also, in terms of American brewers, have not been doing them for that long. And so there are probably, I'm not going to say a small handful because it's certainly way more than that, but there's a small-ish group of brewers who, if they didn't know of each other, they maybe knew of each other and were trying to experiment with these styles, these sort of, you know, tart, traditional Saison styles way back when, and feel a camaraderie with one another. I think certainly Saison brewers seem to, you know, all kind of feel like they have a kinship with one another.
Yeah, what do you think that's based on?
I think it's just based on, you know, there wasn't a lot of literature, I don't think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there was a lot of literature about how to brew these styles. I mean, it was just something that was traditional in France and Belgium, and people just brewed them because that's what their family had done for generations and generations. And so you had these brewers who were trying to learn how to do it without a lot of breadcrumbs, you know, to follow, and sort of had each other.
Yeah, you had, and, like, you know, Phil's book, like the Saison.
Farmhouse tradition. Brewing farmhouse
sales.
That was
out there, and then you had, like, some, you know, online home brewing collectives.
The Burgundian Babel Belt, and sort of some of those early things where people got to know each other and share ideas.
Yeah,
and
you're onto something there, I think, though, because even if even Phil's book, which I think helps people understand the style in sort of a very a fundamental way, so many of the things that make those beers that we love from the old world unique are family secrets, and they're very. It's a very secretive brewing culture over there, even from brewery to brewery.
Yeah,
which is very different than, you know, what's happened in the zeitgeist of American brewing in the last 20-30 years, which has just been like this open source commitment to just about every style you can imagine.
Yeah.
I think you might be right about that. There's a bit of an oral history or a knowledge exchange that only exists kind of in person or over the internet between these particular brewers. Well, what's it like to come here to a place like Shelton? And have such immediate access to them all, or FOFA for that matter. I mean, do you just feel like a kid in a candy store?
Unfortunately, we end up pouring, and we don't get to drink much of them at all.
Yeah, FOFA wouldn't drink much of them at all.
We couldn't drink if you were pouring, which is fine. But unfortunately, we don't get to try that many of them, and also a lot of times it's just there's so many people. There's so many brewers. There's, it's coming at you from every direction. And so sometimes there's not a lot. There isn't always a big takeaway.
Yeah.
Although we're going to drink some beer today.
We didn't drink any beer yesterday.
I didn't leave this room, and then I was like, what the hell am I doing?
So, we're going to use our volunteers a little bit more wisely, and we're going to drink some fucking beer.
Yeah.
Early.
Early today. While there's still beer.
Before it's all gone.
Before it's all gone.
Thanks for listening, folks. If you'd like to hear more from this series, there are a dozen of them published on GBH right now. If you'd like to support GBH, please join the Fervent Few and be part of a productive beer community alongside brewers, fans, salespeople, writers, maltsters, just about anyone and everyone who contributes to striking conversations in beer. We use Patreon to manage our members. You can join us at patreon.com/goodbeerhunting. Aim true or liberal, folks. Have a great week.